So Planned Parenthood, you know, we hear all about the women's rights and all the wonderful things they do, and then we find out, you know, because they've been touting mammograms, they don't do mammograms. They don't have a mammogram machine at any of the Planned Parenthood offices throughout the United States. There's no mammogram machine. Total nonsense. And we find out that they showed, this is a nonprofit, remember, $90 million profit. They brought in $90 million more than they spent, which in my book is called a profit. I don't care what you call it. As a nonprofit, you have a $90 million profit. And we found out that their CEO makes 590K a year. Good for her. But not when it's my money paying her salary. She doesn't have shareholders. She has taxpayers paying for her to the tune of $550 million a year. And you know what else we found out in the last week? And boy, this just hasn't been covered well at all. Do you know that of that $550 million that the taxpayers funded Planned Parenthood under the guise, the Democratic, progressive, Obama lying guise of women's health? Do you know what they do with approximately 25% of that money? This is your money, folks. You conservatives out there listening to me, this is your funds. It all goes to Democratic politicians for their campaigns. Not one dime, not one penny went to a Libertarian, to a Republican, to an Independent. It all went to Democrats. Now why do you think the Democrats support Planned Parenthood? Do you think it's women's health? Or do you think it's that $150 million, give or take a few mil, of taxpayer money which is funneled into Planned Parenthood, then funneled from Planned Parenthood to their Democratic benefactors who then again vote to fund Planned Parenthood? It's the Matrix. Which brings us to the next little bit of the matrix, or the deep state, as you're going to hear at the end of this show. Harry Dent is kind of a gloomy doomy guy. He's also a pretty good economist, but he tends to take the dark view of things. However, he has been right many times. He has called a spade, more or less on time when it comes to economic calamities, more than once. And I was reading an interesting article that just came out that he did. It was prompted by the jobs report, which was just yesterday. Those of you who don't, you know, the media once again is not covering it too much, depending upon which media source you use. So the economy added 142,000 jobs. It was projected to add 200,000 jobs. Now there's more to the story, which almost nobody's reporting. 60 plus percent of those jobs were low wage jobs. 60%. And of the remaining 40%, 90%, about 35%, were quote unquote high paying jobs. In the middle range, the middle class jobs, you know, good paying jobs, it was 5%. And my percentages may be a few percentage points off. It doesn't really matter, does it? Do you get the point? The guys at the very top got a few jobs. The guys at the very bottom got a bunch of jobs. And the folks in between, the middle class, got nothing. Not to mention that there is a, shall we say, disconnect between what is being reported and what is being projected. Oh, and here's another little tidbit for you. Another little tidbit for you. Did you know that the jobs number for August was, it was changed? Yes, the government reported 200,000 some odd jobs. Once again, the exact number is not really important. And you know, hidden in the statistics released yesterday, buried way down at the bottom, was a revision in the actual jobs created in August to 136,000. How many times have you heard me talk in my shows about the lies that are in these government statistics, and even when they're halfway decent, Wait a few months and they'll revise them downwards quietly on a Friday. Here you go. Here's some other little tidbits that nobody's talking about. The Bank of International Settlements, they warned of a massive debt crisis. And they said that any increase in rates in Europe, Japan, and the United States could global a debt tornado. A maelstrom is the word that they used. And then, of course, you know, we had the credit rating slashings of Japan and other things, which I talked about last week. And I have to tell you that Harry Dent, in his article, which just came out yesterday, so he has four cycles that he tracks. He's a big guy on cycles. He likes cycles. So his geopolitical cycle, which is stability versus chaos, he is convinced that it's like clockwork. I'm quoting. It's like clockwork. Every 17 to 18 years, it changes. Its current phase points down to around early 2020 to return to stability. Rounding out the geopolitical environment started by 9-1-1. Okay? So the geopolitical. And then every 45 years, I'm quoting again, powerful clusters of technologies finally move mainstream, revolutionizing how we work and live. So he says, steamships and canals peaked in 1875, radios and telegraphs in 1920, automobiles, highways, electrical appliances, TVs, etc. in 65, and then the internet, handheld computing devices around 2010. So he says there's not going to be a big technological breakthrough with all the economic stuff that goes along with it until somewhere between 2032 to 2055. Then he has a cycle which is called the economic wave. And he says that that is, it peaks and it bottoms every 8 to 13 years. And of course, 8 to 13 years from the last, shall we say, huge hiccup, 2007, he says is between 2016 and 2020. And actually has begun right now. And then he has the demographic cycle, which he says is about 60 years. And guess what? We're at the aging cycle of the demographics. Aging people buy less. So Harry is kind of gloom and doom for the next 4 or 5 years. I think there's plenty of reasons to be very concerned, and I've given you many of them. I'm just giving you, shall we say, another gentleman's take on it. He does warn that very rarely do these four cycles converge, and they're converging now. I guess it's kind of like the four blood moons and the Shemitah on the spiritual and superstitious side. And then you have this economic cycle theory converging. And then, of course, I have talked in the past about other folks who have a war cycle, which is converging. Of course, you know, some of this you have to take with a grain of salt because all these guys are trying to sell you something. Their newsletter, their investment strategy, you know, whatever. But there's always some nuggets. There's always some nuggets. You know, the old adage, where there's smoke, there might be fire, sometimes applies. So, I bring that to you. Now, of all the things I've mentioned today, keep your eyes on this gun control thing, and you better start raising holy hell with your Republican representatives and your conservative representatives, particularly the folks in the Senate. You know, I was part of a town hall meeting with Barrasso and Inslee, the Wyoming senators, and I'm fortunate enough to be invited into those. Oh, you know, I guess they're once a month or so, and I don't know how many people they have from around the state in on the telecom. But you can ask them questions. It's really quite nicely done, and I appreciate it. And you hear a lot of different viewpoints. You get to hear the senator's response. It's all real time and live. And you can ask a question, blah, blah, blah. So, on the last one, I was struck by the fact that both Barrasso and Ensley, and I like them both, were arguing nicely with a gentleman who was maintaining that we need to fight harder, we need to stand up for our principles, and if we shut the government down, we shut it down. And what they said was, well, there's no sense passing bills that the president's going to veto. If we're going to do that, we want to win. Well, you know what, folks? Oh, and then they said, and you know, there's no sense really kind of spending all our ammo until we have a Republican president. I must say, I totally disagree. The House and the Senate should be sending bills up there for Barack Obama to veto, and they should be publicizing in every which way but Sunday, social media, you name it. We sent up so-and-so bill to Barack Obama, and he vetoed it. We sent up a bill to stop the Iran deal, which 70% of the American public does not want to see happen, and he vetoed it. We sent up a bill to do X, Y, and Z, and they vetoed it. We sent up a bill to push through the Keystone Pipeline, which 67% of the population wants, and he vetoed it. And you know, I think that, and parlaying that over to Hillary Clinton, who is part of the Obama administration, let's face it, she's just, you know, she's Obama number three, just like Biden would be Obama number three. I think that would help them get a Republican president, at which time there wouldn't be anybody to veto those bills. But it's a frustrating deal. And, you know, when you have leaders, I really use that term advisedly, like McCarthy with his stupid comment and McConnell with his stupid comment and his atrocious running of the Senate thus far as Senate Majority Leader, you can kind of see where this mentality sets in. But it's very dispiriting, gloomy-doomy. And, of course, it's all part of the Matrix. Which brings me to the very last part of the show. I've been looking forward to this, because this is a gangbuster article. It may put a lot of things in perspective for you. It will make you think. And for those of you who believe it, which is many of you, or who know it in their gut but really haven't been able to put it in words in your mind, I think that this article will be, in many ways, a revelation. Once again, this is by Doug Casey, the founder of Casey Research. It's called The Deep State. I'm quoting now. I'd like to address some aspects of the Greater Depression in this essay. I'm here to tell you that the inevitable became reality in 2008. We had an interlude over the last few years financed by trillions of new currency units. However, the economic clock on the wall is reading the same time as it was in 2007, and the black horsemen of your worst financial nightmares are about to again crash through the doors and end the party. And this time they won't be riding children's ponies, but armored Percherons. To refresh your memory, let me recount what a depression is. The best general definition is a period of time when most people's standard of living drops significantly. By that definition, the Greater Depression started in 2008, although historians may someday say it began in 1971 when real wages started falling. By the way, folks, that happens to be when we went off the gold standard. I was talking about it earlier in the show. It's also a period of time when distortions and misallocations of capital are liquidated, and when the business cycle, which is caused exclusively by currency debasement, also known as inflation, climaxes. That results in high unemployment, business failures, uncompleted construction, bond defaults, stock market crashes, and the like. Fortunately, for those who benefit from the status quo and members of something called the deep state, the trillions of new currency units delayed the liquidation, but are also ensured that what will happen now will be on a much grander scale. The deep state is an extremely powerful network that controls nearly everything around you. Ah, the Matrix. You won't read about it in the news because it controls the news. Politicians won't talk about it publicly. That would be like a mobster discussing murder and robbery on the 6 o'clock news. You could say the deep state is hidden, but it is only hidden in plain sight. The deep state is the source of every negative thing that's happening right now. To survive the coming rough times, it is essential for you to know what it's all about. The state. Now, what causes economic problems? With the exception of natural events like fires, floods, and earthquakes, they're all caused directly and indirectly by the state through its wars, taxes, regulations, and inflation. Yes, yes, I know this is an oversimplification, that human nature is really at fault and the institution of the state is only a mass dramatization of the psychological aberrations and demons that lie within us all. But we don't have time to go all the way down that rabbit hole, so let's just talk about the proximate rather than the ultimate causes of the Greater Depression. And here I want to talk to you about the nature of the state in general, and then something called the deep state in particular. A key takeaway, and I emphasize that because I expect it to otherwise bounce off programmed psychs of most people. Remember the normalcy bias I talk about, folks? Is that the very idea of the state itself is poisonous, evil, and intrinsically destructive. But like so many bad ideas, people have come to assume it's part of the cosmic firmament, when it's really just a monstrous scam. It's a fraud, like your belief that you have a right to free speech because of the First Amendment, or a right to be armed because of the Second Amendment. No, you don't. The U.S. Constitution is just an arbitrary piece of paper, entirely apart from the fact that the whole thing is now just a dead letter. You have a right to free speech and to be armed because they are necessary parts of being a free person, not because of what a political document says. Even though the essence of the state is coercion, people have been taught to love and respect it. Most people think of the state in the quaint light of a grade school civics book. They think it has something to do with we the people, electing a Jimmy Stewart character to represent them. That ideal has always been a pernicious fiction, because it idealizes, sanitizes, and legitimizes an intrinsically evil and destructive institution which is based on force. As Mao once said, political power comes out of the barrel of a gun. But things have gone far beyond that. We're now in the deep state. The deep state. The concept of the deep state originated in Turkey, which is appropriate, since it's the heir to the totally corrupt Byzantine and Ottoman empires. And in the best Byzantine manner, the deep state has insinuated itself throughout the fabric of once was America. Its tendrils reach from Washington down to every part of civil society. Like a metastasized cancer, it can no longer be easily eradicated. I used to joke that there was nothing wrong with Washington that 10 megatons on the Capitol couldn't cure, but I don't say that anymore. Partially because it's too dangerous, but mainly because now it's untrue. What's now needed is 10 megatons on the Capitol and 4 more bursts in a quadrant 10 miles out. In many ways, Washington models itself after another city with a deep state, ancient Rome. Ancient Rome lived upon its principle till ruin stared it in the face. Industry is the only true source of, Here's how a Victorian freethinker, Winwood Reed, accurately described it. Rome lived upon its principle till ruin stared it in the face. Industry is the only true source of wealth, and there was no industry in Rome. By day, the Ostia road was crowded with carts and muleteers, carrying to the great city the silks and spices of the East, the marble of Asia Minor, the timber of Atlas, the grain of Africa and Egypt. And the carts brought out nothing but loads of dung. That was their return cargo. The deep state controls the political and economic essence of the U.S. This is much more than observing that there's no real difference between the left and right wings of the Demopublican. I kind of like that. The Demopublican Party. It's well known by anyone with any sense, that is, by anybody except the average voter, that although Republicans say they believe in economic freedom, but don't, they definitely don't believe in social freedom. And the Democrats say they believe in social freedom, but don't, but they definitely don't believe in economic freedom. Who is part of the deep state? The American deep state is a real but informal structure that has arisen to not just to profit from, but to control the state. The deep state has a life of its own, like the government itself. It is composed of top echelon employees of a dozen praetorian agencies like the FBI, CIA, and NSA, top generals, admirals, and other military operatives, long-term congressmen and senators, and directors of important regulatory agencies. But deep state is much broader than just the government. It includes the heads of major corporations, all of whom are heavily involved in selling to the state and enabling it. That absolutely includes Silicon Valley, although those guys at least have a sense of humor, evidenced by their "don't be evil" model. It also includes all the top people in the Fed and the heads of all the major banks, brokers, and insurers. Add the presidents and the many professors at top universities, which act as deep state recruiting centers, all the top media figures, of course, and many regulars at things like Bohemian Grove and the Council on Foreign Relations, and they epitomize the status quo, held together by power, money, and propaganda. Altogether, I'll guess these people number 1,000 or so. You might analogize the structure of the deep state with a huge pack of dogs. The people I've described are the top dogs. But there are hundreds of thousands more who aren't at the nexus, but who directly depend on them and have considerable clout, and support the deep state because it supports them. This includes many of the wealthy, especially those that got their way thanks to their state connections. The 1.5 million people who have top secret clearances, that's a shocking but accurate number. Plus top players in organized crime, especially the illegal drug business, little of which would exist without the state. Plus mid-level types in the police and military, corporations, and non-governmental organizations. Those are NGOs, folks like Planned Parenthood. These are what you might call the running dogs. Beyond that, there are the scores and scores of millions of who depend on things remaining the way they are, like the 50% or so of Americans who are net recipients of benefits from the state, the 60 million on Social Security, the 66 million on Medicaid, the 50 million on food stamps, the many millions on hundreds of other programs, the 23 million government employees and most of their families. In fact, let's include the many millions of average Joes and Janes who are just getting by. You might call this level of people, the vast majority of the population, whipped dogs. They both love and fear their master. They'll do as they're told, and they'll roll over on their backs and wet themselves if confronted by a top dog or a running dog who feels they're out of line. These three types of dogs make up the vast majority of the U.S. population. I trust you are not among them. I consider myself a lone wolf in this context and hope you are too. Unfortunately, however, dogs are enemies of wolves and tend to hunt them down. The deep state is destructive, but it's great for the people in it. And like any living organism, its prime directive is survive. It survives by indoctrinating the fiction that it's both good and necessary. However, it's a parasite that promotes the ridiculous notion that everyone can live at the expense of society. Is it a conspiracy headed by a man stroking a white cat? I think not. I find it's hard enough to get a bunch of friends to agree on what movie to see, much less a bunch of power-hungry miscreants bent on running everybody's lives. But on the other hand, the top dogs all know each other, went to the same schools, belong to the same clubs, socialize, and most important, have common interests, values, and philosophies. The American deep state rotates around the Washington Beltway. It imports America's wealth as tax revenue. A lot of that wealth is consumed there by useless mouths. And then it exports things that reinforce the deep state, including wars, fiat currency, and destructive policy. This is unsustainable simply because nothing of value comes out of the city. Regards, Doug Casey. That, my friends, is a powerful article. And I hope it gives you something to think about. The deep state. The matrix. What is real, what is not. What is said and what the real agenda is. A movement of a piece of it on the geopolitical chessboard, both domestic and international. And the strategy for the end outcome of the game and by whom for what. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We'll talk to you next Saturday. In fact, next Saturday I'll be talking to you from New York, but more on that next Saturday.